Welcome to episode 14 of the Word Theater Podcast, your weekly access to the world's finest short stories. My name is Cedaring Fox. I am Word Theater's founder and artistic director.
And I'm Kirsty Peart, UK founder and creative partner. This is the fourth week of our seven-week celebration of Joyce Carol Oates stories, performed by brilliant actors and recorded live with the author in the room.
This week, we have a story that was recorded at a sold-out, totally packed event in West Hollywood, California. It was the very first time we'd invited Joyce to join us at Word Theater. I have a feeling there isn't a person who was in the room that day who will ever forget how very emotional and extraordinary it was. Seven actors reading seven completely different but brilliant short stories.
The variety of writing in her stories is simply astounding. For all of you who are able to join us for our live Zoom with Joyce Carol Oates, wasn't it wonderful to meet her? She's such a special woman.
Today's episode features a story that is read by an actor who is an early supporter of our Pushcart Prize benefits in East Hampton, New York. Please welcome Chris Bauer, who will introduce Raven's Wing.
Raven's Wing is a story about an ordinary guy named Billy, a small-time handicapper who loves the racetrack but suffers the irony of luck. The story brilliantly probes the violence and passion that crackle beneath the surface of our lives. Joyce Carol Oates is an amazing writer, and it was quite an experience and a privilege to read this story with her in the room. She seems to understand how we are all searching for a kind of transcendence and how we fail, miserably sometimes. Billy was at the Meadowlands track one Saturday when the accident happened to Raven's Wing. A 3-year-old silky black colt who was the favorite in the first race and one of the crowd favorites generally this season. Though Billy hadn't placed his bet on Raven's Wing, betting the 1-6 favorite held no excitement. And in any case, things were going too well for Raven's Wing. His owner's luck would be running out soon. Telling his wife about the accident the next morning, Billy was surprised at how important it came to seem, how intense his voice sounded, as if he were high or on edge, which he was not. It was just the telling that worked him up, and the way Linda looked at him. So there he was in the back stretch, looping around 1, 2, 3, 4 horses to take the lead. He's a hard driver, Raven's Wing. Doesn't let himself off easy. A little skittish at the starting gate, but then he got serious. In fact, he was maybe running a little faster than he needed to run once he got out front. Then something happened. It looked like he stumbled. His hindquarters went down just a little, but he was going so fast. Maybe 40 miles an hour. The momentum kept him going. Jesus, must have been 300 feet. The poor bastard on 3 legs. Then the jockey jumped off. The other horses ran by. Raven's Wing was just sort of standing there by the rail, his head bobbing up and down. But what had happened was he'd broken his left rear leg. Came down too hard on it, maybe. Or the hoof sunk in the dirt wrong. Just like that, Billy said. He snapped his fingers. 1 minute, we're looking at a $2 million colt. The next minute, nothing.
Wait, what do you mean nothing? Linda said.
They put them down if they aren't going to race anymore.
Put them down? You mean they kill them?
Sure, most of the time.
How do they kill them? Do they shoot them?
I doubt it. Probably some kind of needle. You know, injection, poison in their bloodstream. Linda was leaning toward him, her forehead creased.
Okay, then what happened?
She said.
Well,
an ambulance came out to the track and picked him up. There was an announcement about him breaking his leg. Everybody in the stands was real quiet when they heard. Not because there was a lot of money on him either, but because, you know, here's this first-class colt. A real beauty, a $2 million horse, finished. Just like that. Linda's eyelids were twitching. Her mouth, she might have been going to cry or maybe suddenly laugh. You couldn't predict these days. Near as Billy figured, she hadn't washed her hair in more than a week, and it looked like hell.
She hadn't washed herself in all that time either. Wore the same plaid shirt and jeans day after day. Not that he'd lower himself to bring the subject up. She was staring at him, squinting. Finally, she said,
"How much did you lose? You can tell me."
In a breathy little voice.
"How much did I lose?"
Billy asked. He was surprised as hell. They'd covered all this ground, hadn't they? There were certain private matters in his life, things that were none of her business. He'd explained it. Her brother had explained it too, things she didn't need to know, and good reasons for her not to know.
"How much did I lose?"
He pushed her aside, lightly, just with the tips of his fingers, and went to the refrigerator to get a beer. It was only 10 in the morning, but he was thirsty and his head and back teeth ached.
"Who says I lost? We were out there for 5 races. In fact, I did pretty well. We all did. What the fuck do you know about it?"
Billy said. He opened the beer, took his time drinking. He knew that the longer he took, the calmer he'd get. And it was one of those mornings, Sunday, bells ringing, everybody's schedule off. He didn't want to get angry. But his hand was trembling when he drew a wad of bills out of his inside coat pocket and let it fall on the kitchen counter.
300. "Go ahead and count it, sweetheart," he said. "You think you're so smart?"
Linda stood with her knees slightly apart, her big belly straining at the flannel shirt she wore, her mouth still twitching. Even with her skin grainy and sallow and pimples across her forehead, she looked good. She was a good-looking girl. Hell, thought Billy, it was a shame. A bad deal. She said, so soft he almost couldn't hear,
"I don't think I'm so smart."
"Yeah? What?"
"I don't think I'm anything."
She was looking at the money, but for some reason, maybe she was afraid. She didn't touch it. Actually, Billy had won almost $1,000, but that was his business. Linda was 8 years younger than Billy, just 24, though she looked younger. Blonde, high-strung, skinny, except her belly. She was 5-6 months pregnant. Billy couldn't remember. With hollowed-out eyes, that sullen mouth. They'd been married almost a year, and Billy thought privately it was probably a mistake, though in fact, he loved her. He liked her. If only she didn't do so many things to spite him. If she wasn't letting herself go, letting herself get sick, strung out, weird, just to spite him. He'd met her through her older brother, a friend of Billy's, more or less, from high school. A guy he'd done business with and could trust. But they had had a misunderstanding the year before and no longer worked together. Once, in bed, Linda said,
"If the man had to have it, boy, then things would be different. Things would be a lot different."
"What? A baby? How do you mean?"
Billy asked. He'd been halfway asleep. He wanted to humor her. He didn't want to fight at 2 in the morning.
"Are we talking about a baby?"
"They wouldn't have it, that's all."
"What?
The baby? Any baby?
Jesus, that's crazy."
"Yeah? Who? Would you?"
Linda said angrily.
"What about your own?"
Billy had 2 children, 2 boys, from his first marriage. But as things worked out, he never saw them and rarely thought about them. His wife was remarried, moved to Tampa. At one time, Billy used to say that he and his ex-wife got along all right. They weren't out to slit each other's throat like some people he knew. But in fact, when Billy's salary at GM Radiator had been garnished a few years ago, he wasn't very happy. He'd gone through a bad time. So he'd quit the job, a good-paying job, too. And later, when he tried to get hired back, they were already laying off men. It was rotten luck. His luck had run against him for a long time. One of the things that drove him wild was the fact that his wife, that is his ex-wife, was said to be pregnant again. And he'd maybe be helping to support another man's kid. When he thought of it, he wanted to kill somebody, anybody.
But then she got married after all, and it worked out. And now he didn't have to see her or even think of her very much. That was the advantage of distance. But now he said, sure. Trying to keep it all light. What the hell, sure. Beats the army.
You'd have a baby, Linda said.
Now she was sitting up, leaning over him, her hair in her face, her eyes showing a rim of white above the iris.
Oh, don't hand me that. Oh, please.
Sure, if you wanted me to.
I'm asking about you. Would you want to?
They had been out drinking much of the evening, and Linda was groggy but skittish, on edge, her face pale and giving off a queer, damp heat. The way she was grinning. Billy didn't want to pursue the subject.
How about you, I said,
she said, jabbing him with her elbow.
I'm talking about you.
I don't know what the hell we are talking about.
You do know
what?
I don't. You do. You do. Don't hand me such crap.
When he and Linda first started going together, they'd made love all the time, like crazy. It was such a relief, so Billy told himself, to be out from under that other bitch. But now, married only a year, with Linda dragging around the apartment sick and angry and sometimes talking to herself, pretending she didn't know Billy could hear, now, everything had changed. He couldn't predict whether she'd be up or down, high or low, very low, hitting bottom, scaring him with her talk about killing herself. Her crazy mother had tried that a few times, probably ran in the family, or getting an abortion. But wasn't it too late? Her stomach that size for an abortion? He never knew when he opened the door what he'd be walking into. She didn't change her clothes, including her underwear, for a week at a time. She didn't wash her hair. She'd had a tight permanent that sprang out around her head but turned flat, matted, blousy if it wasn't shampooed. He knew she was ruining her looks to spite him, but she claimed, shouting, crying, punching her own thighs with her fists, that she just forgot about things like that. She had more important things to think about. One day, Billy caught sight of this gray-looking girl out on the street. Coat with a fox fur collar like the one he bought for Linda. High-heeled boots like Linda's. Blonde hair. Wild, springy curls like a model's. Frizzed. Airy, her head high and her walk fast, almost like strutting. She knew she was being watched. And not just by Billy. And then she turned. And it was Linda! His own wife. She'd washed her hair and fixed herself up. Red lipstick. Even eye makeup. He just stood there staring. It took him by such surprise. But then the next week, she was back to lying around the apartment, feeling sorry for herself, sullen and heavy-hearted. Sick to her stomach, even if she hadn't eaten anything. The worst of the deal was, he and her brother had had their misunderstanding and didn't do business together any longer. When Billy got drunk, he had the vague idea that he was getting stuck again with another guy's baby. The racing news was, Raven's Wing hadn't been killed after all. It was news. People were talking about it. Billy read about it in the newspaper. An operation on the colt's leg estimated to cost in the six-figure range. A famous veterinary surgeon, the owner, was flying in from Dallas. And there was a photograph, it somehow frightened Billy, that photograph, of Raven's Wing lying on his side, anesthetized, strapped down, being operated on like a human being. The size of a horse. That always impressed Billy. Other owners had their opinions. Was it worth it or not? Other trainers, veterinarians. But Raven's Wing's owner wanted to save his life. The colt wasn't just any horse, the owner said. He was the most beautiful horse they'd ever reared on their farm. He was insured for $2,200,000, and the insurance company had granted permission for the horse to be destroyed, but still the owner wanted to save his life.
They wouldn't do that for a human being,
Linda said when Billy told her.
Well, Billy said, irritated at her response, this isn't a human being. It's a first-class horse.
Jesus. A horse operated on, Linda said, laughing. And he isn't even going to run again, you said? How much is this all going to cost?
People like that, they don't care about money. They have it, they spend it on what matters, Billy said. It's a frame of reference you don't know shit about.
Then what?
What?
After the operation.
After the operation, if it works, then he's turned out to stud, Billy said. You know what that is, huh? He said, poking her in the breast.
Just a minute. The horse is worth that much?
A first-class horse is worth a lot. I told you, sometimes 3-4 million. These people take things seriously.
Millions of dollars for an animal? Linda said slowly.
She sounded dazed, disoriented, as if the fact were only now sinking in. But what was the fact? What did it mean?
I think that's sick.
I told you, Linda, it's a frame of reference you don't know shit about.
That's right, I don't.
She was making such an ugly face at him, drawing her lips back from her teeth. Billy lost control and shoved her against the edge of the kitchen table, and she slapped him hard on the side of the nose, and it was all Billy could do to stop right there. Just stop! Not give it back to the bitch like she deserved. He knew once he got started with this one, it might be the end. She might not be able to pick herself up from the floor when he was done. Billy asked around, and there was this contact of his named Kellerman. And Kellerman was an old friend of Raven's Wing's trainer, and he fixed it up so that he and Billy could drive out to the owner's farm in Pennsylvania so that Billy could see the horse. Billy just wanted to see the horse. It was always at the back of his mind these days. The weather was cold, the sky a hard, icy blue, the kind of day that made Billy feel shaky. Things were so bright, so vivid, you could see something weird and beautiful anywhere you looked. His head ached. He was so edgy. His damn back teeth. He chewed on Bufferin. He and Kellerman drank beer out of cans, tossed the cans away on the road. Kellerman said, horse people like these were the real thing, the real fucking thing. Look at this layout. And not even counting Raven's Wing, they had a stable worth millions. A Preakness winner, a second-place Kentucky Derby winner, but was the money even in horses? Hell no. It was in some investments or something. That was how rich people worked. In the stable, at Raven's Wing's stall, Billy hung over the partition and looked at him for a long time. Just looked. Kellerman and the trainer were talking, but Billy just looked. The size of the horse. That was one of the things. And the head. The big, rounded eyes. Ears pricked forward. Tail switching. Here was Raven's Wing looking at last at him. Did he maybe recognize Billy? No. Did he maybe sense who Billy was? Extending a hand to him, whispering his name. Hey. Raven's Wing. Hey. The size and the silky sheen of the coat, the jet black coat, that skittish air. Head bobbing, teeth bared. Billy could feel his warm breath. Billy sucked in the strong smell. Horse manure, horse piss, sweat, hay, mash, and what was he drinking? Apple juice? The trainer said. Apple juice, Christ! Gallons and gallons of it. Did he have his appetite back? Billy asked. But it was obvious the colt did. He was eating steadily, chomping hay, eyeing Billy as if Billy was... was what? Just the man he wanted to see. The man who'd driven 100 miles to see him. Both his rear legs were in casts.
The veterinarian had taken a bone graft from the good leg and his weight was down, 1,130 pounds to 880. His ribs showing through the silky coat, but Jesus, did he look good. Jesus, this was the real thing, wasn't it? Billy's heart fast as if he'd been popping pills. He wished to hell Linda was here. Yeah, the bitch could see this. Shut her up for a while. Ravenswing was getting his temper back, the trainer said, which was a good thing. Showed he was mending, but he still wasn't 99% in the clear. Maybe they didn't know how easy it was for horses to get sick, colic, pneumonia, all kinds of viruses, infections. Even the good leg went bad for a while, paralyzed. They had to have two operations, a 6-hour and a 4-hour. The owner had to sign a release. They'd put him down right on the operating table if things looked too bad, but he pulled through. His muscle tone was improving every day. There he was, fiery little bastard. Watch out, or he'll nip ya! A steel plate, steel wire, a dozen screws in his leg, and him not knowing a thing. The way the bone was broken, it wasn't broken, the trainer told him. It was smashed, like somebody had gone after it with a sledgehammer. So he's gonna make it? Billy said, not quite listening.
Hey, yeah, you're gonna make it, huh?
He and Kellerman were at the stall maybe 45 minutes, and the place was busy, busier than Billy would have thought. It rubbed in the wrong way that so many people were around when he'd had the idea he and Kellerman would be the only ones. But it turned out that Ravenswing had always had visitors. He even got mail. This Billy snorted to hear, a horse gets mail? People took away souvenirs if they could, good luck things, hairs from his mane, his tail, that sort of thing. Or else they wanted to feed him by hand. There was a lot of that. They had to be watched. Before they left, Billy leaned over as far as he could, just wanting to stroke Ravenswing's side. And two things happened fast. The horse snorted, stamped, lunged at his hand, and the trainer pulled Billy back. Hey, I told you, this is a dangerous animal.
He likes me, Billy said. He wasn't going to bite hard.
Yeah? Sometimes he does. They can bite damn hard.
He wasn't going to bite actually hard, Billy said.
3 dozen blue snakeskin wallets, Venezuelan. Almost 2 dozen upscale watches, Swiss, German. Chronographs, water-resistant, self-winding, calendar, ultra-thin, quartz, and gold tone. And a pair of pierced earrings, gold and pearl, delicate, Billy thought, as a snowflake. He gave the earrings to Linda to surprise her and watched her put them in. It amazed him how quickly she could take out earrings and slip in new ones, position the tiny wires exactly in place. He knew it was a trick he could never do if he was a woman. Made him shiver. It excited him just to watch. Linda never said, "Hey, where'd you get these?" The way his first wife used to, giving him that slow, wide, wet smile she thought turned him on. Actually, it had turned him on for a while. 2-3 years. Linda never said much of anything except, "Thank you," in her little girl, breathy voice, if she happened to be in the mood for thanking. One morning, a few weeks later, Linda, in her bathrobe, came slowly out of the bedroom into the kitchen, squinting at something she held in the air, at eye level.
"This looks like somebody's hair. What is it, Indian hair? It's all black and stiff," she said.
Billy was on the telephone, so he had an excuse not to give her his fullest attention at the moment. He might be getting ready to be angry. He might be embarrassed. His nerves were always bad this time of day. Linda leaned up against him, swaying in her preoccupation, exuding heat, her bare feet planted apart on the linoleum floor. She liked to poke at him with her belly. She had a new habit of standing close. Billy kept on with his conversation. It was, in fact, an important conversation. And Linda wound the several black hairs around her forearm, making a little bracelet, So tight, the flesh started to turn white. Didn't it hurt? Her forehead creased in concentration. Her breath, warm and damp against his neck.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to Chris Bauer reading Raven's Wing by Joyce Carol Oates. Next week, our Joyce Carol Oates celebration continues with Maggie Siff reading Joyce's short story, Running. For those of you who don't know, the author is a runner.
I've been running recently. Not the prettiest of sights, I can tell you that. Listen, please visit worthitter.com where you can pick up books from our partner, bookshop.org, sign up for our email list and become a member of Word Theatre. Then you can join us for our live streams on the third Sunday of every month. Please tell your friends about the Word Theatre podcast.
Special thanks to Joyce Carol Oates and her entire team for their support of Word Theatre and to the Los Angeles County Department of Arts and Culture for their ongoing support. Also, I'd like to acknowledge Jonathan Sachs, who composed our theme music, and Joseph Cho, our technical director. This is Cedaring Fox in Los Angeles.
And I'm Kirsty Pitt in England. Until next week, signing off.